This episode of the Integrated Home Podcast is powered by Integrated Systems Europe.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Integrated Home, the podcast that's produced by the home integration community for the home integration community. My name is Jeff Hayward, and today I'm joined by Giff and Melanie Malcolm of Bespoke Home Cinemas and Roddy Abbott from Cinema Build Systems as we discuss how best to identify the right client for your business. Welcome to the Integrated Home.
The world-renowned annual tech show will be back in Barcelona from 4th to the 7th of February 2025. It's time for virtually impossible experiences, to discover where show meets business, to uncover tomorrow's tech today and develop our own knowledge. Time to be inspired, reconnect with each other and drive things forward. Time to switch it back on at ISE 2025. Register today and save €215. Visit iseurope.org and use the code INTEGRATEDHOME for your free registration. ISE 2025, connection restored.
So I'm delighted to be joined today by Mel Malcolm and Giff Malcolm from the Dream Team from Bespoke Home Cinemas, and also Roddy Abbott from Cinema Build. Roddy, good to see you. Mel, Giff, good to see you too.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff, thanks for having us on.
That's all right. So Mel, do you want to just first of all describe you and give a little bit of background to Bespoke before you hand over to Giff?
Hi, I'm Melanie Malcolm and I am married to the lovely Gifford Malcolm. We run Bespoke Home Cinemas. We're a family-run organisation and we have been running for nearly 30 years now. We're primarily a cinema room company. We work nationally and I wear many hats within Bespoke Home Cinemas, from the operations side of things, from the HR side, from the marketing side, from the initial point of contact with the clients. When a client gets in touch with us, I'm the first person that they speak to, from communicating with the manufacturers, the distributors, from going to the trade shows. I do a lot within the industry, as you may know. I'm just finishing my term on the CEDIA board. I am a director of Together for Cinema. I'm a founder of Home Cinema Alliance. Yeah, and I'm a mum of two girls as well.
So Giff, you can't do much at all if Mel's doing all that.
No, I just say yes, dear. And, the easiest way of describing my role within the business, but ultimately I do cinema design and cinema build. I'm still on the tools. I shouldn't be, but I love actually building cinemas.
And Roddy, talk to me a bit about your background and cinema build.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. My name's Roddy Abbott. I'm director of a company called Cinema Build Systems. Predominantly, we manufacture systems to build cinemas with. We came from an integration background. And within that, whenever we came across a problem we couldn't buy a product for or source a product, we would actually take it on board and develop and design a product to solve that. And about 6 or 7 years ago now, we got to a point where we realized we'd actually designed more products than we could actually install. And at that point, realized we'd actually made the flip to becoming a manufacturer instead of an integrator. We no longer do installations of our own. We still get involved from time to time with dealers, but fundamentally, we manufacture products within the UK for mainly the UK and European markets.
But I guess from what you've just said, you've got a pretty good insight into how integrators operate as well as how clients interact with integrators.
Yeah, it probably puts us in quite a unique position in the industry because we can really see it from both sides. I think a lot of manufacturers design in a bit of a bubble because they're designing things on a bit of paper that they've no idea. You know, they presume an installation scenario is a perfect environment. It's quite often very far from that. I mean, for instance, we always design products to be, if possible, a one-man install. Because we were a Scottish integration business, we were notoriously tight as well. We didn't want to send two people if we could send one.
Terrible generic characterization, but...
Well, I mean, Gifford's also from the Fair Isle, so I'm sure you can agree. But yeah, it gave us a bit more of an insight into actually where the products are going once they leave our factories. Even now, we do tend to get pretty positive feedback. I mean, I think even Gifford himself said to us in the past that you can tell this has been designed by someone who's fitted one of these, as opposed to, say, a more generic manufacturing type setup.
So we're here today to talk about how you identify the right client for your business and that process of expectation setting, when you're embarking on that relationship. And what struck me with this when I was thinking about it was actually, Mel Giff, you're probably best placed to answer this. Do you think prospective clients actually get the difference between what is a retail sold home cinema product and what is a professionally designed and installed home cinema?
I would say that customers are so confused at the moment. The word cinema is thrown around everywhere. If you go into a retail store, generally a retail store is selling you an electronic product, whether it be a TV and a soundbar, calling it a cinema, or selling all the correct components to make a cinema. But from a retailer's point of view, they're box shifting. They need to get products out the door. Against a installation company, ultimately should be designing a room, not selling components.
So the first conversations that you're having with a client, you must be very conscious that you're already trying to sell the services and what you do as a professional home cinema design and installation company and the benefits of working with someone like you other than going into a shop and buying a soundbar and a few speakers.
Yeah, absolutely. What we're doing is we're not trying to sell them anything. We want to, in essence, educate a customer what can be done. They're coming to us as a technically as a design professional. We're an architect or an interior designer, but for the home entertainment industry. So when a customer is going, for instance, designing a kitchen, they can go to a high street retailer and buy an oven. But if they go to a kitchen showroom, the last thing they're trying to be sold is the oven. Somebody's designing a whole room for them, and an oven will become a byproduct. So I use very much the same idea when I'm designing a cinema. I don't sell projectors. It will become a byproduct of the design and ultimately the budget.
Do you think, Roddy, that enough integrators present themselves as kind of design and installation or design professionals rather than box shifters in that respect?
In the CI market, it's getting a lot better. One of the things we've identified is we're generally the end user of our products generally isn't someone who is actually that almost interested in watching movies. Quite often, the end user is actually someone who's looking for a space in their house to actually escape their day-to-day. And obviously, when we start with a conversation based on technology and products, I think quite often, yeah, the customer can get either confused or almost alienated. On a podcast I was on not that long ago, I talked about a specific client we had, and again, we see this over and over where the sort of typical client we're seeing at the end of these projects is someone who's very successful, wealthy, very time poor, and generally in quite a stressed lifestyle. And what these spaces or environments we're creating for them through guys like Mel and Giff is they're giving them somewhere to actually escape that. It's almost, you know, some form of almost home spa in a way. And yeah, and from that point of view, the technology itself is important to deliver the experience, but the technology should really be an invisible part of the whole package. It's about how they feel when they go into that space and how they feel when they come back out of it as well. Yeah, as I say, we're tending not to sell to movie enthusiasts, but more people who just really need a space in their home to either bring the family together or to, you know, have peace for themselves.
I couldn't agree more with what Roddy said there. Again, my client base, what they're after is a destination. TVs have got bigger and bigger in houses. So, you know, the TV in the lounge is no longer 42-inch. It's, you know, a 65 or a 77-inch TV. There's cinematic experiences that can be done all around the house. But to have a destination in the house that isn't just a big screen, and they can go, we're going to the cinema tonight. One of the bits of feedback that I get from clients is when they're using it as a family space is the kids aren't on their phones because it's an inherently dark room. You're going there for a reason. You're not watching Coronation Street in a cinema. You're going there to either, you know, watch a soap, etc. And yeah, the phones are down. You're not on Amazon. You're not booking your next holiday. You're actually being taken away for a couple of hours. And as you said, taking away from that stress.
So 5 years down the line, Mel, do you think we could be looking at a rebrand situation where you become bespoke home destinations?
I will be on many destinations 5 years down the line. I'll be looking for retirement. So I'll be putting the feelers out for someone to come and buy bespoke home cinemas off us.
Seriously, that kind of presents a bit of a challenge. If you've got, you know, then how you present the services that you provide, you want clients to come to you for a bespoke escape room or a bespoke family time room, don't you really? It's difficult to market that.
Well, I think part of the marketing for cinema rooms is actually coming from other design professionals. Architects and interior designers on plan are now putting cinema room, actually what the room is called. So that same room was in the house, and it used to be the family room or the snug, but it's now the media room or the cinema room.
It was also frowned upon, but over a decade ago, they didn't want to put them on because in case planning would turn them down. But now we're seeing a lot more actual cinema rooms on plan. Yeah, definitely.
One thing that the architects seem to screw up on is the size that room is meant to be, because, you know, they're calling it a cinema and it is definitely a media room sized room. But as I said, that's why the word cinema is banded around. We've got to kind of educate exactly what a cinema can be.
I think to an extent, what we've noticed as well is the cinema is now what used to be the swimming pool. You know, in a very high-end property in the past, the swimming pool was the pinnacle of success, whereas now it looks like, I guess, because of running costs. And ironically, swimming's probably quite a sociable thing where people would rather actually go to a nice health club and go to a nice gym, whereas the cinema is very much a, you know, more singular experience where you'll do that maybe with family, friends, or even on your own. In terms of the room, that actually, again, leads back to a point I came up in the podcast I did with Peter Aylett. And I think I'd sort of created a rod for my own back on that one with him, where we'd actually thought that a white paper would be a really great thing to create, to actually issue to architects to say, in a room that's going to be used as a cinema, this is a sensible size for this many seats or this type of environment, but also even include things like sensible door positions within a room. Because, I mean, again, I remember on many a project, we'd get into the project and then the first thing we'd look at is, this door's in the wrong place. And then it would be quite an expensive thing thereafter to rectify or move. Whereas, yeah, to I guess, make more education available for architects, because again, we want to make their life easier so they use our services. But yeah, it's one of those, if they don't know, they don't know. And I think the part of the problem is our industry is very accommodating and loves a challenge. So when we get given these really small, weird shaped rooms, the first thing we do is go, right, let's see how we can make it work. As opposed to, you know, say, now if you'd come to us 6 months before, you'd laid out the walls, we could have actually suggested this, this, and this. You know, for next time, let's look at that.
So there's a whole degree of education that still needs to be done, both to professionals and also in how integrators present themselves to clients, really, in their businesses.
I mean, we do a lot of training, and to be fair, Mel and Giff were one of the companies we actually put on quite a pedestal to sort of say, you know, that business model is really what you want to be rectifying, less reinventing the wheel on every project, you know, work with things you know that work, you know you can deliver, you can repeatedly deliver. I think the industry's got a wee bit to go. I think it's exciting. I feel like we're maybe on day two, possibly, with, you know, the rest of our lives ahead of us. If we look at rooms and industry 5 years ago, yeah, the last 5 years, we've certainly come on a long way, but I think there's still quite a way to go yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, totally. It's taken us a long while to get the business model sort of tuned to how we want it and feel confident that we're going the right way with it. But, you know, thank you, Roddy, for the compliment. We often get compliments on how we market our business and educate people.
I'll send a compliment further down the line. Dave Slater, when he had DSE Digital up in Newcastle, we've modelled our business on what he did. He was the first company that I saw that was selling cinema seats. He was putting in the interior design elements into a cinema build, you know, and he used to always joke and says, I make more money on the carpet than I do on the projector. So it was, you know, that's very much what we wanted to do, was do a turnkey solution and follow. And that's how the whole industry, I'm hoping, is going. Sell rooms, not products.
And it's interesting you mentioned that. I actually bumped into Dave, I think it was Essential Install earlier in the year, and had a very similar conversation with him, where I always remember they tended to favour sort of dark chocolate browns through the rooms with, you know, pale carpets. Our cinema room that we had up in Dunfermline when we were an integrator was very much modelled on that. No visible speakers. That was what kind of inspired us to really get more into an interior design feel for the spaces than literally a lot of kit set around a room.
And the interior design over the years has changed. As you said, in the same period, we had our first demo space, and it's what I used to call a Mars bar cinema. It was those chocolates and creams. We're now in the period of 50 Shades of Grey. So what comes next? You know, at the end of the day, I hope we don't go back to light-coloured cinema rooms, because the darker colours definitely work better within the space.
Well, interestingly, I can see a move, almost like a split, where we will see a lot more lighter rooms. Again, probably more about the sort of spa feel in them, with the sort of calm, more relaxing colours. But I think that'll probably work in tandem with big direct view displays, whether it's things like the Samsung wall or just very large flat panels. But certainly for projection, I think we should, obviously, you know, given we can't project black, we should be keeping the rooms pretty dark and light controlled. But again, for me, it's exciting because, yeah, even we don't really know where this is going to go over the next few years. We're just trying to keep on top of things.
Over the next few years, the worry is suddenly going to be, is it going to be VR headsets? And we now no longer have seats. We just have VR spaces. Roddy's selling exactly the same systems, but the walls are thicker, so we can bounce off them.
Who knows? Anyway, look, how do clients do their homework in such a confusing situation? Or how should they do their homework?
Well, there's the obvious ones. Google, social media. Obviously, we generate a lot of our leads through social media and through our website. So have a good look at social media. Have a good look at the integrators. What work are they producing? Is it the stock images that they're putting out that we see repeatedly? Are they doing case studies? Are the manufacturers writing case studies on them? Are they entering awards? So just do your research. Have a look to see if they're CDA certified. Just if they're out there constantly day to day promoting what they do. And it's important for us as a business. We take everyone on a journey. Literally, we post the renders and then we do day 1, 2, 3, all the way up to day 15 or however long the room takes us. And then we show the completed room and the handover. So it's important to have a look at what those integrators are marketing, rather than some integrators may only do one cinema a year or one cinema every 2 to 3 years. So yeah, do your research and make sure that you are going to a cinema company, I believe, that is a specialist.
I think in a lot of cases, customers don't know what they need until they're shown it. Demonstration spaces like Mel and GIF have, and you know, there's many across the UK, are probably such an eye-opener when an end user actually steps into them, because I think the feedback they will no doubt have is, wow, I didn't know it could do this, or I didn't know it would be this good. Social media for us has been a hugely powerful thing. If we go back 5-6 years, Melanie's probably the one that guided us onto it ourselves. We pretty much joined Instagram just because she told us to, you know, as opposed to us, to be honest, necessarily seeing a real need for it. But it's kind of become a great thing. And I think what's nice about social media is people can look at it when they're relaxed on an evening, when they're maybe in a nice mindset about things. They're not necessarily trying to rush into shops during the working day or at a weekend when they're really busy. But in terms of actually customers understanding what the systems can do, I think it's really down to almost what we talked about earlier, is identifying what the customer needs the system for or needs the space for. If they are an absolute enthusiast and are wanting to digest a lot of content and movies, I dare say that person's going to be more involved in the actual kit or hardware that goes into the room, perhaps. Whereas if it's a client who's really looking for a space for the family in the home, then you know, there's maybe more of a balance to the actual aesthetics and finish of the space. The nice thing, again, slightly biased point of view from us on the aesthetics and finish of the space, is it's something that's really easy for an end user to actually understand, because they can look at two colours of fabric or, you know, a type of wood or a metal finish and instantly know if they like it or not. Whereas if you try and have a conversation with a client about maybe two specific surround sound amplifiers or processors, they'll just think one of them's really expensive and not know why. So I think because the clients are now getting more involved in, or the industry in general is getting more involved in it being a complete room or space, there's more for the customer to actually get involved in and basically understand. So I think, yeah, the market itself's changing quite a lot because of that. It's gone, as GIF said earlier, away from just being hardware or product, that is now the byproduct. One of the things we talk about on our training is things like how easy it is to buy, say, a Tesla. You go onto the website, you pick the model, you've got five colours to pick from, two options on your wheels, two interior options, and then the next click, you've basically bought it. If we look at the experience of buying a cinema, it's very different to that currently, because there's a lot of dealers out there who don't actually know what they're selling, let alone what a customer actually wants. And I think, yeah, this is part of where the industry has a bit of focus to maybe gather around to really work out how do we go quicker from client meeting to deliverables and make everything within that as sort of easy as possible.
Welcome to DBM, the premium AV distributor delivering unparalleled video and audio solutions for your clients. Discover what Bespoke Home Cinemas said after recently partnering with us on a groundbreaking project.
Bespoke Home Cinemas was contracted to transform an unusually shaped living room into a dedicated home cinema, with particular emphasis on high quality audio. Based on a comprehensive proposal and having experienced the Meridian system during their showroom visit, the client selected a 7.2.4 Meridian Performance Grade audio setup. By partnering with DBM, we were able to supply an immersive cinematic audio experience that exceeded the client's expectations.
Simplify your projects and elevate your AV integration with DBM today. From premium solutions to stress-free planning, we're here to redefine your audiovisual experience.
In terms of that initial engagement and communication with a prospective client, I mean, that's critical for you and your team at Bespoke when you're actually interfacing with them for the first time. I mean, you must pick up so many clues from the first dealings with people.
Well, obviously, the first point of contact is myself. I contact the client, give them a call, just reach out to them, find out a few important questions, and you get a good idea within half an hour usually of what it is that they're looking for or they think that they're looking for. And then obviously I give them some education on what Bespoke are about, the services that we provide. And then after half an hour or so, we try and ask the question on the budget as well. We find out at the end, if we want to go further, the next stage for us is usually a Teams call, or we invite them to the showroom, but just depending on location. So, you know, within half an hour, we can find out a lot about the clients and they find out a lot about us.
But I'd imagine they're also pretty guarded, and you must come across clients who don't necessarily want to show you their whole hand at those early stages.
Yeah, when Mel hands the call over to me, and I've usually got a consultation Zoom or Teams call with them, touching on the word budget is horrible, but it's the worst bit. But everyone has a budget in their head, and whether the budget is a realistic one is what we're trying to get over, so we're not time wasting. Again, most of our clients are coming to us from social media. They're seeing a pretty room. They don't see any of the tech. In all our rooms, all the tech is hidden anyhow. But then they're coming and they don't know whether the room is 20 grand, 60 grand, 100 grand. For a car dealer, it's a lot easier. If you're in a BMW showroom, you see what car the customer is milling around. And if they're going around a 3 Series, there's no point showing them the 7 Series. But at the 3 Series, it could be a 316 reps car or an M3. So it's a bit easier in some industries to get an idea. When I'm speaking to a customer, I ask them for a budget constraint. It's not what they will spend, but give me a set of blinkers to work within, because what am I meant to do? Pitch them a 40 grand cinema and a 200 grand cinema and say the 200 grand cinema will be better. So budget has to be discussed at some point, and we're never embarrassed to ask it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in absolute agreement of don't skirt around the budget question, because it'll save everyone a lot of time. What we noticed when we were doing installations in and around sort of the Edinburgh area, a few sort of key identifiers of almost like our standard client, where when they were in touch, we could notice in most cases their house would generally have a name as opposed to a number. It would generally be worth upwards of £1 million. But what we'd also identified quite early on is it is very unlikely, unless it is a very specific client, that the customer will ever spend more than 5% of their property value on a cinema. So, you know, if someone's coming to you with a requirement for a cinema and they're maybe in a £250,000 house, the chances are that's a soundbar and a big TV. If they're in a £1 million plus house, you know, we're maybe looking into the £50,000 plus market. But that's not a hard and fast rule. For us, it was just a really good guideline to get an approximate feel for them. We would quite often say to them, as opposed to asking for a budget, you will have a figure in your head you're comfortable spending. Could you let us know what that is to save us all time? Because if they said 40,000, we knew we could deliver something for that, but it would save us going down a whole rabbit hole of other options and possibilities. And on the same note, if it was a higher budget, we could really tailor that for them. Another interesting identifier we noticed on our clients was 99.99% of them were iPhone users or Apple users. And the interesting identifier for us on that was a lot of people who tend to favor things like Android devices is usually because they want to be able to tweak or adapt or play with that device. Whereas an iPhone user tends to just trust Apple to make something that's going to work. And as a consultant, if you have a client who's really wanting to get quite hands-on and interfere in some ways or add to the system, yeah, it's not always a marriage made in heaven. So for us, Android user was actually for us a bit of a red flag on our sort of tick list of the client, because we would just know quite soon they were going to be very hands-on, and maybe that client was more needing a little bit of advice and going off to do it themselves than trust us to deliver the whole project with them. So yeah, so as I say, budgets, I believe, unless you are dealing with, you know, the Saudi royal family, where perhaps budget isn't an issue, I think for the majority of people we're dealing with in the UK, yeah, budget is a very real question to be asking.
One of my pointers when we do a site survey, if it's for a room conversion, I always like to see the client's kitchen. Again, where Roddy was saying it to do with the percentage of a house value, I've found over the years that roughly the cost of what their kitchen is what they spend on cinemas. So if I go into a kitchen and I see a Wolf range and a Sub-Zero fridge, they're getting a high-end cinema. It just always seems to work. But, you know, there are other products available. Likewise, if you're walking in and, you know, they've got a Clive Christian kitchen or a Tom Howley, they're after something custom-made. It's not an off-the-shelf package kitchen. And again, it's taking a customer who values that those small little details and the quality of spending a little bit more on a product that delivers, you know, that little bit better.
Is there anything else that you're looking for in those first kind of engagements with the client to just figure out what you're going to do for them?
For us, a key thing was actually, this sounds quite awful, but that it's someone we actually want to work with. Polite, respectful, and fundamentally, I need to be careful how much I say on a podcast going out, but whenever we're looking at maybe new dealers coming on board, it's very rare we'll ever answer the first email, because we want to see what the second email looks like when they get in touch, because that will give us a really good indicator of what that person is going to be like moving forward. Because people only get worse. They never get better, unfortunately. So, you know, we see the honeymoon initial email. The second email is quite often a very good tell, which may be like, we've already sent one, we've still not had, you'd better get, I'm just like, red flag, we're really not sure if those guys are going to be coming on board, if I'm honest. And it was simply because, for my time being an integrator, we probably dealt with quite a lot of clients we on hindsight would have been better not dealing with, because, you know, a great client can really give you a good day, a bad client can give you a terrible month. And I think that's another thing is, just because it looks like a high value project doesn't necessarily mean it's a good project. And I've noticed from us, we have been very careful who we've taken on board as dealers over the years now. The stress levels in our business are so low. We generally deal with people we like dealing with. It's like calls with our mates whenever we're getting calls in. Whereas when we were an integrator, yeah, there was definitely a few clients we had who, if you saw the phone ringing, you just thought, oh, great, what is it now? So I guess just a feel for the client at a personal level as well. Because again, we're all here to do our best for people, whether we're manufacturers or integrators. And you'll always do more for someone you like and get on with than someone you feel you're being forced to do work for.
For the record, I just want to say that Roddy said yes to doing this podcast on the second email. So thanks, Roddy.
I think you did bump into me in person, so it's probably easier even.
It did help. But Giff, what do you think about that? How you sort of get a feeling or a vibe from the client?
It's taken years to be able to say no. The amount of work we actually turn down because the vibe isn't there. You take your gut feeling straight away because you have to support these clients after the actual project.
And we also won't do any takeover projects from where clients come to us and they've had a previous installer and they're not happy. We say no to those.
Yeah, because 2 weeks after that, the customer forgets that we weren't the initial installer and are still mopping up previous stuff. If a client has had a bad experience, and again, it's our evolution for our business is that we were a home automation company and I had a passion for cinema. I don't think I've ever had one happy home automation customer. You know, the minute there's an update, their system doesn't work and it's always, you know, lands on our shoulders. But my home cinema customers are happy. It's fit and forget. If done right, you know, a lot of those customers have become actual friends. You see the tone in their email, the tone in, you know, everything about it. But I think, you know, for anybody getting into the industry, take a feel. If your gut feeling is they're going to be a nightmare, walk away.
Yeah, you've got to have a bit of empathy going on there, haven't you, Roddy?
Yeah, absolutely. If it's not right, it's not right. As much as we may not be right for them, or you know, the install company might not be right for that client. I mean, for instance, if we get inquiries via social media or email from end users, it's very rare we'll ever just give them one dealer's number. We'll usually give them a couple of dealers in the area, and again, we genuinely say, we look at them like children. We don't have favorites. You speak to them and find out who is a better fit for you. Because again, we all work differently in our businesses and we have different approaches to things. So again, it's like any type of relationship. Ultimately, you've got to make sure it works for everyone and it, you know, has a net positive outcome. I think it's part of getting older. I don't have time to spend it with people I don't really want to spend it with. You know, with having two younger kids who are growing up very quickly, you know, when I look back to some of the call-outs we used to have with the installation side of the business on, you know, smart home especially, there was the odd night where I'd miss bedtime stories because of something like that. And now you look back and think, it wasn't worth it. So I guess it's sometimes the ability to look back, you know, 5, 10, 15 years and go, yeah, we remember that. We're not going down that route again.
I think it's really interesting listening to you all talking about this because it shows again that we're not in the business of just selling products or technologies. It's an emotional experience, the whole journey from when you guys get bought on to the actual end product, if you like, of the cinema room. It's a journey where lots of emotions will get tested.
I think it's similar to what Giff mentioned there as well. From their background, they'd come from home automation, but with a passion for cinema. I was the same from when I was at university. I remember having probably the most expensive hi-fi from anyone else I knew at university. I spent my first student grant on a Sony CD player and some separates. So I've always been passionate about this industry from, going back to like 95. And I think if you look at the companies that are doing particularly well in the space, I don't think any of them set out to make money. I think they set out to do a really good job on something they enjoyed, and the money's the reward for doing something well, but it shouldn't really ever be the driving force, because I think you then struggle to make decisions for the right reasons. And I think it's, you know, it's quite visible out there, and especially with these guys, you know, there's a passion to it. Otherwise, as you say, Giff, you wouldn't still be on the tools after all this time. You could have easily, you know, reclused into an office by now or had someone else running it.
I went off the tools for 3 years and absolutely hated it. I love my job. I hate running a business. Luckily, we have, you know, Mel's the best part of the team because Mel's a businesswoman. I'm a integrator. You know, I'm an industrial designer by trade, and I get to design a room and I still get to build it. So ultimately, I have a paid hobby.
The clients really buy into the passion from both of us. So especially when Giff does a demonstration in the showroom, and whether they've been to other integrator showrooms, one thing that's always a compliment is, you know, you're really passionate about what you do, and that's what they buy into.
They always say that I never try and sell them anything.
Yeah, You know, I mean, we often get people crying in our demonstrations, and even last week. No,
that's not because they've seen the budget that you've put to the project.
I'm very good at picking the correct films on Kaleidoscape.
Yeah.
When a customer comes in, and I know which ones will trigger which emotions. Yeah.
But then right down to handing over the room up till last week was the client actually gave Giff a hug. Yeah. It was just, yeah. So, there's a lot of emotion around it all.
And the other thing I think that's quite important as a tell is probably body language. And I'm not sure how many of those first interactions that you have that you can see how guarded the client might be, you know, with their arms folded or whatever. Are there any things that you particularly look at?
By the time they get to the showroom, they're quite relaxed with us because we've had a couple of meetings. So by the time they come to the showroom, they know what they're coming for. Yeah, they're still shocked when they have the demonstration, but they are quite relaxed, our clients. And obviously there's those clients that we don't even get to the showroom because they're based in London or, you know, far north.
That presents a whole different challenge, doesn't it? If they can't do a face-to-face meeting, I mean, how do you figure out whether they're right for you or not?
The clients that have come to us from North London or Anglesey have never been to our showroom, but these two particular clients that I've had conversations with, one followed us on TikTok and the other followed us on Instagram. Both of them said, I've been following you for years. I know exactly, I don't want to look at anybody else. You're the guys that I want to go with. And that was literally the first thing that comes out of their mouth. So, you know, you've got a sense that, yeah, we are the right people for them. And that is really, really easy. And when you say, you know, can we invite you? Can you make a trip to Leeds for a demonstration? No, we really don't need that. And let's move to the design stage.
And on both of the two clients Mal's talking about there, on both of them, we didn't have to ask for a budget constraint. They went, we followed you. We trust what you do. What can you deliver for X? So it made so much easier. Now, ironically,
very similar rooms.
Both clients spent well above X by the time they finished, but they came in straight away saying, you know, with a rough idea of what they wanted to achieve.
So it was a confidence built out of the way you present the business and the way you do that through social channels. They obviously would have looked at your website as well and everything that you're about.
Before COVID, I had to get everyone to the showroom. I've invested all this money in a showroom, had to get them into the showroom to do my pitch, which now, you know, Mel has a conversation that I set up.
Appointment only as well. We've built the confidence that...
But I will then have a team or Zoom call with the client and, you know, initially it's meant to be a half hour call. Some of these calls go on for a couple of hours. And again, they see my passion, you know, again, the tells from a customer, if they're trying to get off the call, the ones who stay on the call and are asking questions, you know, you instantly get this feel and we build up a rapport straight away, which I would have never thought pre-COVID that you could ever sell a cinema on a Teams call. But, you know, we have a portfolio behind us and the two bits go together. And yeah, it's amazing how many customers just, as Roddy said earlier, who are wealthy customers who have very little time. They don't have the time to drive 2 hours to come to a showroom, to have a demo, to make a decision they've already made.
I guess looking specifically at Mel and Giff's setup there is, you know, they've got a great track record. They've got a huge portfolio and that adds so much confidence to customer. I mean, back to when we were integrators, we really focused on cinemas for the last few years of the installation business. And again, it made it so easy because we had a track record to sort of say, this is a project we did last month, this is one we did 2 months before that, this is one we did the month before that, and so on and so forth. I think the other thing as well is, as we touched on earlier, is if you're doing it properly, you're not actually trying to sell it. You're just trying to explain what you can deliver and make sure that's what the client actually wants. I think we see a similar irony in what we do as a manufacturer in that we don't have a sales team. We don't have a single salesman on the road, yet we seem to be doing okay. And I think it's one of those where if you make the product good enough, it kind of sells itself. And I think if you're having to really get behind something to really sell it and really try and get a customer over the line, you're probably got quite a weak offering. And I think that's the thing is, you know, again, if we look at Mel and Giff, it's very clear what you're getting when you go there. And also it's that confidence that a customer gets that it can be delivered, because, you know, we can physically see they are doing it through videos and so on and so forth. And that was also something for us that really resonates, because from when we did our own installs, wanted to do a turnkey solution from start to finish. We didn't want to rely on third parties. We tried a couple of times and we had a lot of issues. So that then made us sort of forced our hand to create everything in-house to have a complete system. When we then transferred that into the manufacturing side of things, it was the same. And, you know, we try and empower and train our dealers so they can offer something they can actually deliver, which I think is something, again, that the industry had maybe been a little bit weak on for a while, where there was more, ironically, companies doing really good renders than companies able to actually deliver the reality of those spaces. So for us, it was very important when we started on the manufacturing side that anything we ever showed as a render was something that was very deliverable. And I think it just rolls back into customer experience of, you don't want to be shown this, but actually when you get it delivered, it's like, this isn't actually what you sold me. This is, yeah, you know, this is terrible.
Yeah.
You want it to be the other way, where you show them something great, and then when you deliver it, they're blown away and can't actually believe it when they start looking at the details.
What would be your one piece of advice to integrators about finding the right client for their business?
So in terms of finding the right client for the business, you've actually got to look at your own company initially and show what you want to sell. There, in some ways, there's no point in having a very open conversation with a client and the customer says, I want this, 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 and this. But actually, you know, what they're asking for is a Rolls Royce and you are a Volvo dealership. Or on the same note, you sell Mercedes, but they've come with a Ford budget. So I think it's really important to, before you think about who your customer ultimately is think about what you can actually offer them and deliver well. And again, we always say is simplicity is key. You have a more simple offering that you can deliver perfectly than something super complicated that maybe falls through the gaps and the details really let it down. If you look at Porsche, they know what they create and deliver, and therefore the customer knows if they're a Porsche customer or not. And I think we've seen over the last few years, lots of companies, as I'm sure much that pains you guys, have come into the cinema spectrum of, yeah, we're now a cinema specialist. But what I would always ask them to maybe look at internally is, at what level is your speciality, is your, you know, layer of the market segmentation you're looking at, is that actually ultra high end where you're maybe only doing one or two projects a year? Is it, you know, upper mid, lower mid, or more entry level, where, you know, your entry level system, which will be a great system, is, you know, maybe Sonos soundbar, big TV, media wall, and you're delivering three of them a week? Is actually look at what it is you want to specialize in, where your passion's in, and where your skills are, importantly, and your resources can deliver. And then the customers for that will find you.
When we opened the showroom over 10 years ago, we actually had a point of sale Sonos stand, because we thought that Sonos obviously is the recognized brand. When people come to you, they say they want a Sonos system. So we thought, oh, we'll get point of sale and we'll sell Sonos. And that was the only sort of box shifting that we did. However, those Sonos clients are not the bespoke home cinemas clients. So we thought we could convert them into taking on a cinema room, but it didn't quite work that way. So you've got to really be confident in who you are. So obviously now we are super confident in what we do and what we sell, but it takes time to sort of, you know, get that feel and test the market.
And people new into the market, as I already said, lots of people are coming in and wanting to be a cinema specialist. They want to jump onto this bandwagon, which is ultimately good for the business as long as the quality that they're delivering at their level is still up there, because there are still some cowboys that are out there. And you've also got, you know, it's a tough market, and you've then got the issue of race to the bottom. The amount of times we get sent redacted quotes from other companies, from a customer who's gone, can you beat this? You know, what's your price for that? And that's an instant red flag. We don't reply. It's, you know, people are coming to us for that design service to deliver an ultimate system within their budget. We're not here to race to the bottom just to get the work. There's way too many busy fools out there.
Funnily enough, we've actually coined the phrase that we use on training quite a lot of, this should now be a race to the top, not to the bottom. We should be just working to get better.
The quality of work over the last few years from our company, other companies out there, and you guys, I'm looking at the quality of this work on social and going, wow, this is far better than the big boys were doing 10 years ago. It's, you know, social is actually being great for that because you can be really transparent. It's not just one pretty picture on your website at the end. You can actually show the whole journey to the end user.
Fantastic. Look, there was some great stuff there. Thanks, Mel, Giff and Roddy. Those insights, brilliant. You can find out more about The Integrated Home on our social channels at Integrated Home Podcast. The Integrated Home is brought to you with the support of Integrated Systems Europe. We support Together for Cinema. We are a Wildwood Plus production.
The Integrated Home supports Together for Cinema. Together for Cinema is a community interest company that collaborates with the AV industry to design and install cinema rooms in children's hospices and other deserving locations across the UK. So far, thanks to the huge generosity of manufacturers, distributors and integrators freely giving of their time, products and expertise, we've created 46 dedicated cinemas, equivalent to an installation value of about £1.2 million. In these special places, families, staff and volunteers are now enjoying fantastic movie experiences together and helping to create very, very special memories. Help our industry continue to make a difference. Visit togetherforcinema.co.uk and find out how you can be involved to make short lives just that little bit better.